Vidura.
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 Api.
Also.
Uttavat.
From the source of
Uttava.
Shrutva.
Having heard.
Krishnasya.
Of Lord Krishna.
Paramatmanaha.
Of the Super Soul.
Kridaya.
For the sake of pastimes in the mortal world.
Upata.
Extraordinarily accepted.
Dehasya.
Of the body.
Karmani.
Transcendental activities.
Shlagitani.
Most glorious. Cha.
Also.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation.
Vidura also heard from Uddhava about the appearance and disappearance of Lord Krishna, the Super Soul, in the mortal world, which is a subject matter sought after with great perseverance by the great sages.
Purport. The subject matter of the appearance and disappearance of the Super Soul, Lord Sri Krishna, is a mystery even for the great sages. The word Paramatmanaha is significant in this verse. An ordinary living being is generally called the Atma. But Lord Krishna is never an ordinary living being because He is Paramatma, the Super Soul. Yet, His appearance as one of the human beings and His disappearance again from the mortal world are subject matters for the research workers who execute research work with great perseverance. Such subject matters are certainly of increasing interest because the researchers have to search out the transcendental abode of the Lord, which He enters after finishing His pastimes in the mortal world. But even the great sages have no information that beyond the material sky is the spiritual sky where Sri Krishna eternally resides with His associates, although at the same time He exhibits His pastimes in the mortal world in all the universes one after another. This fact is confirmed in Brahma Samhita 5.37. Goloka eva nivashati akhilatma bhutaha. The Lord, by His inconceivable potency, resides in His eternal abode Goloka, yet at the same time as the Super Soul, He is present everywhere, in both the spiritual and the material skies, by His multi varieties of manifestation. Therefore, His appearance and disappearance are simultaneously going on, and no one can say definitely which of them is the beginning and which is the end. His eternal pastimes have no beginning or end, and one has to learn of them from the pure devotee only and not waste valuable time in so-called research work. We'll read the translation once again.
Vidura also heard from Uddhava about the appearance and disappearance of Lord Krishna, the Super Soul in the mortal world, which is a subject matter sought after with great perseverance by the great sages.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Kvayam Rupa Kadamhayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gire Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So we are seeing here that the conversation between Vidura and Uddhava has actually come to an end. Just a few verses ago, Uddhava has left for Badrikashram as he was instructed by Lord Krishna to do before Lord Krishna disappeared from this world. And we have come towards the end of this chapter. In a few verses, this chapter will end. And now Vidura will approach Maitreya Muni, like Uddhava had requested him to do. Because
Before Uddhava was leaving for Badrikashram, Vidura was still not satiated, like how pure devotees always want to keep hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So he was asking Uddhava some more questions about Lord Krishna and his activities. And at that time Uddhava instructs him. He tells him that Maitreya Muni was also present with me when I was with Krishna just before he disappeared. And therefore you should please now go to Maitreya Muni, who is also nearby on the banks of Yamuna. And you please go and ask him now further questions about Lord Krishna's activities, and he will enlighten you. So now Vidura will approach, at the end of this chapter, Vidura will approach Maitreya Muni, and the following chapters will be a conversation between Maitreya Muni and Vidura on the subject matter of Krishna and his pastimes. However, here Sukadeva Goswami is giving like a synopsis to Parikshit Maharaj in these few verses, and he is telling him what Vidura heard from Uddhava. So as part of that, he is telling him that Vidura heard from Uddhava about the appearance and disappearance activities of Lord Krishna, who is the super soul, whose activities are very difficult to understand. And Srila Prabhupada says that the appearance and disappearance of Lord Krishna is actually a subject matter which has been greatly discussed, and not only discussed, but it has been greatly researched by sages and even by people in the material world who are trying to find the source of the Lord by material means. So it is this disappearance pastime is actually, especially the disappearance pastime of Krishna, is not very often discussed because it's quite bewildering. So if we see in the Bhagavatam, it is not very elaborately discussed, because it is very, especially at this stage of the Bhagavatam, it is not being discussed very elaborately because it is quite bewildering. And the most bewildering part here about Krishna's disappearance is that he leaves his mortal body behind when he disappears. And this is something which normal people cannot accept. They say that if you say that your Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how could he have left a material body behind, like ordinary conditioned living entities? How is it that he is doing such activities which are actually proving that he is just an ordinary living entity who had just some more powers than others? That is what usually people claim in the material world who don't have the correct knowledge about Krishna. So especially this disappearance pastime is quite bewildering. And I was listening to a lecture by His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj, and he was explaining that why Krishna left his material body behind, just like ordinary living entities leave. We know it is said in the Bhagavad Gita also that what happens when the soul passes from the material body. So we heard that soul from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, that the soul is eternal. It is just as from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age, the soul is continuously passing within the same body. Similarly, at the time of that, the soul is passing into another body. And when the soul passes into another body, the previous body is left behind, which then normally is cremated or buried depending on which culture that person belonged to. So in the same way, Krishna also has left his mortal body behind. And Shivaram Maharaj explains that there are three reasons why Krishna does this, why he has left his mortal body behind. He says that first of all, Krishna, not only the Lord is worshipable, but everything associated with the Lord is also worshipable. And obviously, he is Sachidananda Vigraha, so his body is also Sachidananda. So his body is extremely worshipable. And therefore, Shivaram Maharaj explains that Krishna leaves behind a token for his devotees, so the devotees have something to worship when he is gone. And I read in one of the Puranas, it is mentioned that actually Arjuna does the final rites for Krishna and Balaram and many of the Yadus who lost their lives in the fratricidal war, which happened just before Krishna's disappearance. So Arjuna takes Krishna and Balaram's body and he does the funeral rites for Krishna and Balaram. So this activity is just like an ordinary living being. Like, you know, an ordinary living being leaves his soul and then the body, the funeral rites are done. But Shivaram Maharaj explains that this is so that the devotees have something to hold on to, because obviously there's so much agreement, there's so much grief when Krishna leaves the material world. So the devotees have something to look forward to, and therefore Krishna leaves this token behind. That is one of the reasons for this disappearance pastime being enacted in this way, in a bewildering way of leaving the mortal body behind. The second reason why Krishna leaves his mortal body behind, which Shivaram Maharaj explains, is that actually it is a test of faith for devotees. So by reading such pastimes, is our faith being shaken? When we read that Krishna has left the material world and he has left in the most ordinary way, And is the faith of devotees being shaken, or is their faith still intact in the Supreme Lord and His activities? And do the devotees still feel that even though the Lord is doing such activities, apparently normal activities, He is still transcendental to the three modes, and He is still transcendental to the material world? So that is one more reason why Krishna does that, so that the faith of devotees is tested and the faith of devotees becomes stronger despite reading about such apparent ordinary activities of the Lord. And the third reason which Shivaram Maharaj explains, and which Prabhupada also addresses in the purport, is that Krishna actually wants faithless people to go away. He actually wants the conviction of faithless people to grow stronger by doing such activities. Because anyway, ordinary faithless people, they claim that Krishna was just an ordinary living being. He had just some extra powers. When we tell them about the killing of Putna or lifting of Govardhan Hill and all that, they say, oh yeah, yeah, he was an ordinary conditioned being, but he had just extra supernatural powers. So for people, such people who have no faith in the Lord and who have no faith in the Lord's supremacy, the Lord deliberately does these activities so that the conviction of the faithless people grows stronger, and all the more they can claim, see, we were telling you that Krishna is in an ordinary person, and see now how he has left this world. He has left his material body behind, like we all do. So then how y'all are claiming that he is the Supreme Lord? We were always telling y'all that he is an ordinary person. So this is one more reason why the Lord does this, because he wants to make their conviction stronger in the non-existence of the Lord. And why does the Lord do this? So we see in the Nectar of Devotion it is mentioned, one of the characteristics of devotional service is that it is sudurlabha. Sudurlabha means it is rarely achieved. So Krishna is ready to give everything to to the people of the material world. He is ready to give lots of opulence if people worship him for opulence. He is ready to give mukti also if people are worshipping him for mukti. But one thing which the Lord doesn't like to give very easily is bhakti unto him. And why he doesn't give so easily bhakti unto him? Because the Lord gets purchased by pure love. The Lord becomes completely controlled by the pure love of his devotees. And this is manifest. This we have seen from many pastimes, from the Krishna book and from the Bhagavatam. Like for example, Mother Yashoda, he was completely under the control of Mother Yashoda's love. Or the gopis, he was absolutely under the control of the gopis' love. So Krishna, in fact it is mentioned that the elderly gopis, who were also in Vatsalya Bhav with Krishna, Krishna used to ask for laddu or makhan or something like that, and they used to actually tell, no Krishna, you dance for us first and then we will give you the laddu. And Krishna used to dance for them. They used to clap and Krishna used to dance in his childhood. So he is dancing on the clapping of these elderly gopis. And this is just because he is completely under the control of their love. They are pure devotees who have Vatsalya Bhav, and they derive great pleasure from all these activities of Krishna. So that is why Krishna does not give his bhakti so easily, because he is purchased by the pure love of his devotees. And what is the beginning stage of bhakti? The beginning stage of bhakti is Shraddha. So that is why Krishna doesn't want, because once Shraddha or the faith is there, then that devotee will gradually progress to bhava, to prema. He will gradually progress if he is in the right association and doing his following the process of Krishna consciousness nicely. So Shraddha is the beginning stage, and then that will eventually manifest into prema. And that is why Krishna does not allow that faith to become strong of people who are anyway faithless and who don't want their faith to be strong. So that is one more reason why Krishna apparently does these activities, bewildering activities of leaving the material world by leaving his mortal body behind. In fact, Krishna is so strong, like Krishna doesn't want these faithless people to approach him so easily. And that was one of the reasons why the Lord instructs Lord Shiva that you go down to the material world and you start an upper sampradaya, which is the Mayavadi Sampradaya in the form of Shankaracharya. So actually these were instructions given by Lord Krishna to Lord Shiva, that you go down and under my instructions you start this Mayavadi Sampradaya, this Mayavadi philosophy you propagate. And why does Lord Krishna instruct like this? He instructs like this, and the Acharyas explain, so that all people who are faithless, who don't have so much conviction about the supremacy of Lord Krishna or the personal form of Lord Krishna, such people, it is to keep these people away from the pure bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. That is the reason why this whole Mayavadi philosophy was propagated by Lord Shiva in the form of Shankaracharya, in the material world, so that the faithless people can stay within that sampradaya, within you, they can, you know, keep dabbling within the philosophy of Mayavad, and all the pure devotees can, you know, peacefully continue to follow the four bona fide Vaishnava sampradayas. And so that these faithless people do not try to then enter the four bona fide Vaishnava sampradayas and then try to contaminate it. So that was one reason why he tells that you start this upper sampradaya so that these people can stay away, the faithless people can stay away from the pure bona fide sampradayas. And Prabhupada would always say that, like he is saying in the purport also, Prabhupada said that there are so many people, ordinary people in the material world, who are doing lots of research on the disappearance and appearance of Lord Krishna, and even great sages are doing research and trying to understand these bewildering activities of Lord Krishna. But Prabhupada always used to say, especially about these researchers, these materialistic researchers, Prabhupada used to say that we have limited intellectual capabilities, and plus our senses are not fully developed. As mentioned in the Ishopanishad, Prabhupada says that human beings, conditioned souls, have tendency, you know, they have four defects. So they have a tendency to make mistakes. They are illusioned. They have cheating propensity, and their senses are imperfect. So because our intellectual faculties are not fully developed, and plus we have imperfect senses, by using such intellectual capability or by using such senses, how can a researcher find out something about the Lord? So just as in science, if you know, we take the subject matter which these researchers have so much faith in. So if we take the subject matter of science, now as it's mentioned in the Science of Self-Realization series also, so in the subject matter of science also, if something has to be measured, let's say the acidity of a solution has to be measured, then the equipment that is used is actually a litmus paper. So a litmus paper is used to find out, when you dip the litmus paper in the solution, depending on which color the litmus paper changes into, you can determine whether it's acidic or base. So that is the equipment which is used to find out. Now can we use a vernier caliper to find out the acidity of a solution? Or can we use a micrometer? No. So even in ordinary science, there is a certain specific equipment which is used to measure certain qualities of a test. So just as a vernier caliper is used only to measure the diameter, as to use to measure the width or something of objects, and a litmus paper is used to measure the acidity, you cannot use one for the other purpose. So in the same way, Prabhupada explains that Krishna is actually beyond the three modes of material nature. He is transcendental to this material world. So then how can we measure Krishna, or how can we understand Krishna by using our material senses and our material intellectual capabilities? How is it possible? So just as for science we have specific equipments for specific tests, just similarly to understand Krishna, there is a specific way. But people think that no, I can use my own material senses to understand Krishna's appearance and disappearance. But that is not true. To understand Krishna, who is transcendental to matter, so who is spirit, you have to use a method which is appropriate to understand that spirit. And the Ishopanishad mentions that that method is actually Shabda Pramana. To understand the Lord, there is oral reception which is required. There is hearing which is required from authorized sources who have realized the Supreme Lord and who have understood the pastimes of the Lord. So only in that way, through proper hearing from the bona fide acharyas, is it possible to understand these activities, these apparently bewildering activities. And we see Vidura setting an example. He is also hearing from Uddhava, who is another pure devotee, about the pure appearance and disappearance pastimes. There is no speculation, there is no trying to draw their own conclusions based on mental speculation. That is not happening here. Vidura is also following the method of Shabda Praman, which has been authorized by acharyas to understand the Supreme Lord. So even if, when we talk about faith and how the Lord does not allow the faith or the conviction of faithless people to grow more, so we see that even in material fervor, scientists, like Shivram Maharaj was also explaining, that scientists always question. They always say that, oh, how can we accept your God? What is the proof that your God exists? And when, you know, there is this famous conversation between a student and a teacher, that, you know, it's an example which has been made up just to prove that the Lord exists and the Lord's existence is accepted on faith. So this student was having a conversation with his professor, and the professor was an atheist. And he asked this student, who was a propagator of God consciousness, and he asks him that, have you seen your Lord? And the student says, no. And he says, have you smelled him, touched him? How can you then prove that the Lord exists? And the student says that I'm accepting it on faith. And then the professor says, he says that based on scientific analysis and based on scientific tests, we cannot accept that your Lord exists. How can you just say that it's based on faith? And after that, the student then questions the professor. He says that, have you seen, do you know what is cold? And he explains that cold is just the absence of heat. Similarly, darkness is just the absence of light. And he says, then he asks all the students in the class, he says that, has anyone seen the professor's brain? And obviously the students are now in an uproar. They say, no, we haven't seen the professor's brain. So then the student asks the professor, he says that, when we have not even seen your brain, we have not smelt your brain, we have not touched your brain, then how do you expect us to accept your lectures? And then the professor's face has gone really white. And he says, yeah, you'll have to do it on faith that I have a brain and I've studied all this. And then the student says that, there you go. That is what we are also using to understand the Lord. So this was a conversation which happened between a student and an atheistic professor. So even in science we see there are so many things which are accepted on faith. Shivra Maharaj was explaining that there are so many scientific experiments which are conducted. Not every scientist has conducted every scientific experiment. So some of the scientists are accepting the conclusions which other researchers or scientists have done. And how is that being accepted? It is being accepted on faith. For example, if we are told certain qualities of some metals in chemistry, or we are told about the law of gravity. Now we personally, every person hasn't tested the law of gravity. So we are accepting certain things on faith. So in the same way, there are certain people in the transcendental field who have actually done their experiments, who have actually realized the conclusions, and then they are spreading the message. And there also then we have to accept it on faith, putting our faith in the experience of these people, just as we put our faith in the experience of scientists to accept certain scientific conclusions. In the same way we put our faith actually in the experiments or so-called experiments, or we actually put our faith in the realizations of these people who have seen Krishna, who have realized Krishna, who have drawn their conclusions based on what they have heard from other acharyas about Krishna. So disappearance, obviously, that is why disappearance pastimes become bewildering, because people are not putting their faith and people are not hearing from the right sources. And therefore, the disappearance pastime, if you see, like here it is just mentioned, but it has been little bit described more in detail in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the 11th canto, it is mentioned that how Lord Krishna disappeared, how after the entire war between the Yadus, and how after everyone died, first Lord Balaram left his body by going into a yogic city, and he lit up a fire and he actually left his body like that. And then Lord Krishna sat down under a tree and he also closed his eyes and then he left his body. So this pastime has been described in the 11th canto. So why it has been described in the 11th canto is so that people have actually gone through the first 10 cantos systematically, and their faith has become strong in the supremacy of the Lord. Especially in the 3rd canto, 5th canto, we read so much about creation and secondary creation. So all these pastimes or all these activities of the Lord are elaborately described by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj, so that people have their faith, they realize that yes, this is the Supreme Lord and this is how amazing his pastimes are of creation. And then their faith has become strong by reading the first 10 cantos, and then in the 11th canto the disappearance pastime has been described, so that then devotees can accept it. Devotees themselves don't become bewildered. And once they accept it, they can give the correct understanding to others who have not accepted this and who are not able to understand this pastime. And it is described that when the disappearance of the Lord happened, although he had left a material body behind, he actually, in front of Daruga, had come actually to pay his obeisances, Krishna's chariot driver. And at that time, the Lord actually rises up. First, all his weapons rise up and they are proceeding towards the spiritual sky. And then the Lord is rising up in his chariot. And the entire chariot along with the Lord is going up to the spiritual sky. And it is mentioned that all the demigods came to know, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. They came to know that the Lord is now disappearing. He is winding up his pastimes in this world. So all of them come, and it is mentioned they crowd the entire sky because they want to pay their homages. They want to pay their obeisances to the Lord. And there it is mentioned that the Lord was rising like this and he was going through the material world directly into the spiritual world. But the Lord's movements were very difficult to trace. And it is mentioned that most of the demigods couldn't understand where the Lord is proceeding and which path he is taking to leave this material world. But Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, because they are the two most powerful demigods in this world, they could get a glimpse of Lord's movements. But even they were completely amazed when they saw the Lord leaving like this in his spiritual body to the spiritual sky. So Prabhupada says that if Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are amazed at the disappearance activity and the way the Lord is rising to the spiritual sky, what to speak of all these researchers? What to speak of all these jnanis who are trying to understand Krishna through their own research? How will they not be bewildered? How will they understand if Lord Brahma and Shiva themselves are feeling amazed and some of the demigods are not even able to trace out? And at that time, at that point in the 11th canto, Sukadeva Goswami actually explains to Parikshit Maharaj. He says that, Sukadeva Goswami says that people may question that how is it that the Lord left the material world like that. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Prabhupada says that actually Krishna was acting like a magician. So just as a magician can make things appear and make things disappear by using tricks, in the same way Krishna is putting up a show for people. He is making his appearance in this material world, and when he feels it's appropriate time, he is making his disappearance pastime. And by leaving his material body behind, he is going up in the spiritual sky, to the spiritual sky in his chariot. So Prabhupada compares this activity of Krishna to a magician. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares it to a magician putting up a show. And then Sukadeva Goswami clarifies to Parikshit Maharaj. He says that yes, these activities of the Lord are quite bewildering. But he says that don't even consider for a moment that the Lord was acting like an ordinary person. And actually Sukadeva Goswami gives evidence to prove that the Lord is not ordinary, or these activities of the Lord are not ordinary. So there are four evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj, that how the Lord is beyond this material birth and material death, and how he is transcendental to death. So the Lord, the first example which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj is that of Krishna bringing his guru's son back. Now we know the pastime that when Krishna and Balaram finish their studies with Sandipani Muni, and after that, you know, as was the custom in the Vedic times, that people have to give some, the students have to, disciples have to give some Guru Dakshina to their guru when they complete their studies. So as part of the Guru Dakshina, Sandipani Muni, who knew the prowess of Krishna and Balaram, he knew that these are the supreme personalities of Godhead. So he asks for something which is impossible for ordinary people to do. And he tells them that I have lost my son to the ocean. So you please go and bring my son back. Because I know your power. So you bring my son back from the world of the dead. And Krishna and Balaram actually do that. They trace out Sandipani Muni's son and they actually bring him back to Sandipani Muni. And that was their Guru Dakshina to Sandipani Muni. Bringing the son back from the world of the dead and giving a living son to Sandipani Muni back. So Sukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj that if this Lord, who can go to the world of death and who can bring a dead boy back to life, do you think he will die in an ordinary way? So that is the first evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj about Lord Krishna's disappearance and how he is transcendental to death. The second evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj was Parikshit Maharaj's own example. He says that Sukadeva Goswami says that Krishna is even beyond Brahman. And he is even beyond anything which has been created by Brahman. And he says, and he gives the example of Brahmastra. So he says that actually when you were in the womb of your mother Uttara, because of Ashwatthama releasing the Brahmastra, you were actually dead in your mother's womb. You had lost your life. But Krishna, because Uttara had come to Krishna begging for your protection, because you are the last living heir to the kingdom, Krishna actually enters your mother's womb and he actually brings you back to life. So that time the Brahmastra was still within the womb, but it did not affect Krishna because he is beyond all these weapons. Brahmastra is considered to be one of the most powerful weapons in the material world. But Sukadeva Goswami explains to Parikshit Maharaj that Krishna is beyond all these weapons. So actually he was trying to explain that because we know Krishna's death happened actually by an arrow which was shot by Jara the hunter, who mistook Krishna's foot to be a deer, and he shoots the arrow. And then Krishna, actually Sukadeva Goswami is trying to explain that how can an ordinary arrow, which is, you know, belonging to an ordinary hunter, how can such an arrow take away the Lord's life when the Brahmastra also cannot affect the Lord? He was inside your mother's womb, the Brahmastra was still there, and you had died because of the Brahmastra. But Krishna brought you back, but and plus the Brahmastra did not affect. He actually nullified the effect of the Brahmastra inside the womb. So that is the second evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj. The third evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj is about Lord Shiva. He says that this Lord, this Supreme Lord Krishna, could even defeat Lord Shiva in battle. And he was referring to the battle which happened with Banasura. So he says, this pastime has been elaborately described in the Krishna book. He says that Krishna could defeat Lord Shiva, who is one of the most powerful demigods in the material world, in battle. Then what to speak of ordinary people or ordinary hunters? How can he not be able to defeat them? Or how can he die at the hands of such ordinary people? So when he has the capacity to defeat the most powerful demigod. So that is the third evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives. And then the fourth evidence which Sukadeva Goswami gives is that when Jara the hunter, this Jara the hunter actually mistook Lord Krishna's foot as a deer, and he shoots an arrow. And then he realizes, when he sees that, oh, this is Lord Krishna, he was actually in his 400 form under the banyan tree. And Jara realizes that he has committed such a big offense. Jara realizes that this is the Supreme Lord. So he comes and begs forgiveness. He falls at the Lord's feet. And he bathes, Bhagavatam explains, the 11th canto explains that he bathes the Lord's lotus feet with his tears. And he begs forgiveness and he tells that, now you take my life away, my Lord, because I have committed such a grievous offense unto you. How could I have shot an arrow unto you who are the Supreme Lord? So you please give me some appropriate punishment and you take my life away. This is how Jara is begging forgiveness and he is repenting for the act that he had done. But Krishna tells him that, no, I had just used you as an instrument. So it was actually Krishna's will. Obviously, Jara was just an instrument that was being used by Krishna. It was Krishna's will to wind up his pastimes and go back from this material world and go back to his eternal abode. So he says that, I just used you as an instrument, Jara, and this is what was destined to happen. I wanted it to happen in this way. So you don't worry at all. And just imagine, Krishna is so merciful. He's such a merciful Lord that the person who has shot an arrow to him, which will become the cause of Krishna's disappearance from this world, the Lord is giving him the highest planet, which is Vaikuntha. So he tells Jara that, no, you haven't done anything and now you go back to the spiritual world. And actually in front of the Lord, there is a chariot which comes down and Jara in his own body goes back to the spiritual world. It's not that Jara died and then it is described that the soul went back to the spiritual world. The Bhagavatam describes that in his own body, which was a material body, Jara actually ascended on the chariot and he went back to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha planet. So these are the four evidences which Sukadeva Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj. He says that if he could actually send Jara back in his own body to the spiritual world, and there was no body with Jara left behind, then how can we understand that the Lord is an ordinary living being just because he is leaving a material body behind? So Sukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj that you don't get bewildered by all these things, because these are some of the evidences how the Lord is not an ordinary living entity and how the Lord is supreme. And how, even the demigods and all are astonished by this, but you don't get astonished. So we see that, Sukadeva Goswami is giving all these evidences, but these evidences will not be accepted by materialistic researchers because their faith is not there in the scriptures. Their faith is not there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So they actually feel that they are big, they are great. But in front of Krishna, anybody even who is very great is actually insignificant. So what to speak of these material researchers? Like we said, even Brahma and Shiva couldn't understand the Lord's disappearance. And therefore the story of Lord Brahma is quite appropriate here. So we know once when Lord Krishna was in Dwarka, Lord Brahma actually goes to visit Lord Krishna. And the doorkeeper asks Lord Brahma, who are you? So Brahma is a bit taken aback. He thinks that he is one of the most important persons in this material world. And how is it that the doorkeeper has the audacity to ask him, who are you? But anyway, he tells the doorkeeper that, I am Lord Brahma. Can you please tell Krishna that I am Lord Brahma who has come to visit him? And then the doorkeeper goes and tells Krishna that Lord Brahma has come to visit you. And Krishna understood that there is some defect in Brahma's attitude. Brahma is thinking that he is very great because he has created this one material world. And that too he has done the secondary creation. He is not even the primary creator. So then Krishna tells the doorkeeper, he gives a message to the doorkeeper to ask Lord Brahma that which Brahma, go and ask that Brahma which Brahma has come. And the doorkeeper gives this message to Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma is further taken aback. And he thought that he was the only Brahma in this whole universe. But little did he know that there are so many Brahmas. It is described that the material universes are like mustard seeds in a bag full of mustard seeds. So as many material universes are there, those many Brahmas are there. And in fact, this material universe where we live is actually one of the smallest. And therefore, Brahma has only four heads. Some of the material universes are huge. And depending on the size of the material universe, Brahma's number of heads increase. So in some of the material universes, Brahma has 100 heads. And in some of the material universes, he has even more heads. So the Acharyas explain over here that Krishna was actually trying to show that even if Brahma is the creator of this material world, still in front of Krishna's eyes, he is insignificant. So if Brahma is insignificant, what to speak of people like us? You know, some of us might be Brahmas of our own companies, creators of our own, like CEOs of our own companies. Or we might be Brahmas of our own homes. Oh, I have created this house with my blood and sweat. So we might be Brahmas of our own house. Or at least we are the Brahmas of our own body. We think we are in control of our body. This is my body. Like that we think. But Krishna is trying to say that no matter what Brahma you are, whether you are the Brahma of your own body or your own house or you are the whole universe or your own company, you are still insignificant in my eyes. And this, understanding this, actually realizing this, that you know we are insignificant, even though we might be great, especially you know for Lord Brahma, to realize this actually brings about humility in the heart. And once there is humility in the heart about the insignificant position that we have in front of the Lord, who is the super soul, as it is mentioned here, who is the Paramatmana, who is the super soul of the whole world, then that humility will actually generate the thirst for understanding then who we really are. Okay, even if Lord Brahma is insignificant and I am also insignificant, then it brings about the humility and it gives us the impetus to understand, okay, then who am I really? What am I really in this material world? And once that thirst for understanding who we really are there, and once that knowledge has been obtained, then there will be implementation or practice of the knowledge. And then the practice of the knowledge will bring about a transformation of the heart. And once the heart is transformed, then we will be able to understand all these bewildering pastimes of the Lord. So it is very important to understand that we are insignificant in front of the Lord. No matter how great material researcher we may be, we will not be able to understand his pastimes. But it is not that Krishna is very strict. Like he, you know, rejects, he says, oh, even a Brahma is insignificant in front of me and nobody is significant and I am the Supreme Lord. So it's not that he's a very strict and cruel master. That is not what is the conclusion of this pastime which happened between Krishna and Lord Brahma. He is actually a very merciful master. He is not only merciful, he is very selfless and he is very giving. Now in the material world, if we see, there are many people who have opulences. There are so many people who are so wealthy. There are many people who are so beautiful in this material world. But not everyone is ready to share their wealth. We see especially, in fact in the material world, most of the people who are wealthy are quite miserly. They want to use their wealth only for their own sense gratification. They are not very giving when they have so much wealth. You'll find very few people who will be charitably disposed or who will want to share their wealth with others. Or beauty. Not many people would want to share their beauty. People in fact work so hard to preserve their beauty. The entire cosmetic industry is working on that premise that people want to preserve their beauty even if they are old and their beauty is fading away. But Krishna is not like that. Krishna is the most beautiful person in the whole universe. We know. In fact, the meaning of the word Krishna is most attractive. So he is the most attractive person in the whole universe. But yet Krishna is ready to share his beauty with everyone. And therefore one of the muktis, we know there are five types of liberation. And one of the liberation is called as Sarupya Mukti. Sarupya Mukti means Krishna gives his own form to you when you get liberation and you go back to the spiritual world. And therefore we see in Vaikuntha, all the residents of Vaikuntha also have 400 forms. In fact, it is mentioned in the scriptures that all the residents of Vaikuntha look exactly similar to Lord Krishna, to Lord Vishnu. They also have 400 forms, they also have Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. The only difference is the Srivatsa mark, which is there on Lord Vishnu's chest. So in this way, Krishna is so merciful. He is giving his own form, which is so beautiful, to his devotees who get the Sarupya Mukti. And even in Krishna book it is mentioned that when Krishna was living in this material world in Dwarka, his son Pradyumna had exactly the same features and same color as Krishna. It is mentioned that when Pradyumna would enter Dwarka, people would get mesmerized because it would almost feel as if Krishna is entering Dwarka. So that is how merciful the Lord is. He is very giving. So he is ready to give his form, he is ready to give his beauty, and he is also ready to give all his godly qualities to us. But the only problem is, are we ready to accept these godly qualities? Are we ready to take them? Are we ready to transform our hearts? And are we ready to accept the form, the qualities that Krishna is ready to give us? And in that matter, we can see the pastime of the gopis. Now the gopis are completely, why the gopis have this exalted position? Because they have accepted the godly qualities which Krishna has given them. They have accepted the love which Krishna is ready to give all of them. So in fact, it is mentioned that what are the gopis praying for? What are they meditating for? Just as we all meditate so that we can have Krishna constantly in our remembrance. We have smaranam of Krishna constantly. It is mentioned in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto that the gopis are actually meditating that somehow this Krishna should go out of my mind. That is the meditation of the gopis. And why are they meditating like that? Because of their exalted love for Krishna and because they have accepted all the godly qualities which Krishna has given them, they are absolutely in remembrance of Krishna. Not even for a moment they are able to forget Krishna. And that is actually providing hindrance in their daily activities. And because the gopis are actually householders, it is mentioned in the Krishna book, the gopis are actually married to different people. They were married because in Vrajalila, Krishna has Parakiya Bhav with the gopis. Parakiya Bhav means they are actually Krishna's paramours. They are not Krishna's wives. So all these gopis were married to different cowherd boys in Vrindavan. And they had their mothers-in-law who used to chastise them. Because even while they were churning butter or while they were doing filling water, somehow they would remember Krishna and they would get stunned. And then they were not able to carry on their normal activities properly. It would provide like an impediment in them, and then they would get chastisement from their mothers-in-law that they are not doing their activities. So the gopis' meditation is that they should actually forget Krishna. And there the example of candle wax can be given. So why gopis' position is so exalted and how they are able to do this? So it is mentioned that if you want to add color to a candle, we see in the market there are so many scented candles, there are so many beautiful colored candles available. So for that, the wax has to be melted. And once the wax is melted, then the color is added in the wax. And then it is poured into a mold so that we get a colored candle. Or the scent is added actually when the wax is melted. And then it is poured in the mold so that we get different scented, different candles having different scents. So in the same way, the analogy has been explained by Acharyas, that we have to actually allow our hearts to be melted, like we melt the wax. So we allow our hearts to be melted through the process of bhakti, through the process of shravanam, through the process of oral reception from the bona fide Acharyas about Krishna and his pastimes. So through the process of hearing and following the process of bhakti, our hearts should become melted. They should become completely soft. And then Krishna is like the color. So when our hearts are completely melted, only then will the color be able to enter into our hearts or into that wax, melted wax. So in the same way, if we keep our hearts soft and we keep our hearts melted, then this color will enter and then it will not go out. So that was the position of the gopis. Their hearts were completely melted in love for Krishna. And therefore Krishna had entered their hearts and completely become one. So once the color has gone into the wax, it's difficult to extract the color out. So in the same way, the Krishna in the form of the color, once he has entered our melted hearts, it will be difficult to take him out. And for that, there is one more analogy which the Acharyas give. They say, now we see that, you know, Vallabhag, like Krishna is always standing in a threefold bending form. So the Acharyas explain that why Krishna has this threefold bending form. So they say that anything which is straight, if something is straight, it is easy to take that thing out. For example, if we have a box and there is a small, like hundi box, for example, and there is something straight which has gone inside, and let's say the opening was a bit big. So if something is straight, it's easier to take that thing out of a small opening. But if something is bent or if something is crooked, then it is very difficult to take that thing out from a small opening. So the acharyas explain that the reason why Krishna is in a threefold bending form, and he has entered our hearts, he enters the hearts of his devotees also in the threefold bending form, because then it is very difficult to take him out. If something is straight, it comes out easily, but because he is in a threefold bending form, and once he has entered into our melted hearts, it is very difficult for us to take out Krishna, just as it was difficult for the gopis to take out Krishna. So then Krishna will take residence in our hearts, and he will always stay in our melted hearts. So that is our aspiration, that we melt our hearts properly. We transform our hearts through the hearing process. We transform our hearts by understanding that we are insignificant. And then we allow Krishna to enter into our hearts in his threefold bending form. And then we allow him to stay there permanently. And then it's hard to take Krishna out of your heart. And there are examples of devotees in the scriptures which are given who had so much attraction for Krishna that even if in their own personal lives Krishna had actually caused tragedy, still they were always attracted to Krishna's qualities, and not for once did they even denigrate Krishna or they spoke one bad word about Krishna. And there are three examples given in the scriptures of three great demons whom Krishna kills. Demons are demoniac people. The first one is Ravana. Now actually it is mentioned that when Ravana was killed, his wife Mandodari, she was lamenting. But the scriptures, Ramayana explains that Mandodari was not lamenting that my husband is lost. What was Mandodari lamenting? Mandodari was lamenting that my husband died pursuing the wrong cause. That is what Mandodari was lamenting for. Mandodari, in fact, it is explained in the Ramayana that there were 13 personalities who came and explained to Ravana how he should give up this pursuance of Sita, that how he is going to meet with his death. He is actually playing with fire. So many saintly personalities, including Mandodari, explained to Ravana. So it's not that Mandodari was jealous. Mandodari had lots of co-wives. Mandodari was not the only wife of Ravana. But Mandodari knew that Sita is the supreme goddess of fortune. And Mandodari knew that Lord Ram is the supreme lord. So including Mandodari, so many personalities explained to Ravana. But there was no effect. And therefore Mandodari was lamenting at that time. She was not for once did she say anything to Lord Ram. Not for once did she feel a grievement that, you know, why this Lord Ram had to come and kill my husband. Not for once was she saying anything bad about Lord Ram. She was only lamenting that, oh, my husband had died because of a wrong cause. He could have transformed himself. He could have listened to good advice. But he did not do it. And therefore he got killed at the hands of Lord Ram. So that was her lamentation. She was still glorifying Lord Ram's supreme position. And she was still saying that he shouldn't have done this to the Supreme Lord. The second example which is given is that of Vali. Now when Vali was killed by Lord Ram, the pastime is there in the Ramayana that actually Lord Ram hid behind a bush. He hid behind a tree and then he killed Vali. So it was not a very Kshatriya, or it was not a very morally correct way of killing someone, because Kshatriya code is that you can't kill someone from behind. You cannot attack someone from behind. That person has to be face to face with you. But Lord Ram actually killed Vali from behind. And at that time Tara, who is the wife of Lord Ram, of Vali, she comes out. And again, she is so enamored by the beauty of Lord Ram. So she is not again cursing Lord Ram that, oh, why did you kill my husband Vali? She is actually attracted to the eyes of Lord Ram, and she is saying that she sees, because it is mentioned in the scriptures that the Lord's eyes always have a reddish tinge to them, whether Krishna's eyes are described or Lord Ram's eyes are described. They always have a reddish tinge. And Tara is praising Lord Ram's eyes at that moment when her husband has been killed. She is saying that, oh, how is it that the Lord's eyes are so red? Obviously he is not crying over, because usually eyes become red when we are crying. So she is saying, obviously he is not crying over the death of Vali. Or eyes become red when someone is angry. So she is saying, obviously he is not angry right now. But I know why Lord Ram's eyes are red. They are red because of lack of sleep. She is saying, because Lord Ram is so much concerned about the welfare of the people in this material world. He is always thinking about how to give a better life or how to take these conditioned souls back to the spiritual world. So because he is always concerned and always thinking and always in anxiety about the condition of these people in the material world, therefore he is having sleepless nights, and that is why his eyes are red. So she is glorifying Lord Ram's position as being the well-wisher of living entities. And that is how she is glorifying Lord Ram's beauty and his beautiful eyes. She is not even once saying, "Oh, why did you kill Vali? That was such an abominable way to kill my husband," hiding behind a bush, not even attacking him from the front. She is absolutely not questioning Lord Ram about that. And the third example is of Duryodhan. Now, Duryodhan is, you know, one of the most discussed characters in the scriptures as to what one should not be. And when he died, his wife Bhanumati, she was also lamenting. But again, she wasn't lamenting for Duryodhan's death. She was lamenting that Duryodhan had so much opportunity to reform himself. He had good advice from his uncle Vidura. Krishna himself came as a peace messenger and he tried to make peace between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. But she said that Duryodhan died representing what one should not be. And she said that is my only lamentation for Duryodhan. He did not die. He will be remembered throughout history. Not for good deeds, but he will be remembered throughout history for what one should not be. And that was the lamentation of all these three wives, of Mandodari for Ravana, of Tara for Vali, and of Bhanumati for Duryodhan. So we see there are devotees like that, whose hearts are melted because of love of Krishna, and they have allowed Krishna to enter their hearts. And then when even Krishna does any bewildering acts, or even any acts, you know, tragic acts of killing their own husbands, or bewildering acts like, you know, this disappearance pastime, still they are not bewildered. They will not get bewildered because Krishna is there in their hearts. Their faith is firm in the transcendental position of the Lord. And that is something which we also aspire for, that our hearts become melted and the Lord makes our faith strong in Him, so that we as devotees don't get bewildered when we read about all these pastimes of the Lord. And with that, we'll end the class here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments or corrections. There are no questions. We'll just take 2 minutes to speak about Kaliya Krishna Das. So speaking about disappearance, it's actually his disappearance day also. Kaliya Krishna Das is a personality who is there in Chaitanya Leela. He's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So Kaliya Krishna Das was an eternal associate of Lord Nityananda actually. And he is one of the 12 Gopas in Krishna Leela. So in Krishna Leela, his name is actually Lavanga Gopa. And he has come down as one of the associates of Lord Nityananda. It is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when Lord Nityananda came, the 12 principal Gopas came down in the Chaitanya Leela. From Krishna Leela, the 12 principal Gopas came down to Navadvip to assist Lord Nityananda specially in his pastimes. And one of those Gopas was Lavanga Gopa, who came down as Kaliya Krishna Das. So Kaliya Krishna Das was born in Khatwa, which is very close to Navadvip. And it is mentioned that he had a deity which he worshipped throughout his life, which was called as Kalachand. And there is not much Kalachand. And there is not much information given about Kaliya Krishna Das. And also it is mentioned that we should not confuse this Kaliya Krishna Das with Kal Krishna Das. Kal Krishna Das was actually a servant of Lord Chaitanya who accompanied him on his South India tour. And Kal Krishna Das was the one whom Lord Chaitanya saved from the Bhattaris and from the influence of women. But this Kaliya Krishna Das is different. He was an eternal associate of Lord Nityananda. It is mentioned that Lord Nityananda's lotus feet were his life and soul. And when Janva Mata came to Khatwa to celebrate the festival of, to install some deities, Kaliya Krishna Das was part of that entourage of Janva Mata. So this is the information which we have about Kaliya Krishna Das. So we thought we'll share about him on his disappearance day. So we'll end the class here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.